Hey, dude, this dog leg stinks, man.
Okay, groomer, do something about it, man.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Hey, all you pet stylists. You found the Groom Pod. Welcome to our virtual salon. My name is Susie, and I'm your host. I'm a mobile groomer from Seattle, Washington, and anyone who knows me will tell you I love to talk, especially about my job. One of my favorite people to talk to is my friend and mentor and co-star of the show, Miss Barbara Bird.
Hi, Susie. Hi, folks. Thanks for listening. Hey, listen, I am so excited to talk about this list of ingredients you sent me to take a look at. This shampoo is a little different.
Ooh, cool. I love it when you get to dive deep into a shampoo product. That's one of my favorite types of episodes. And my actual favorite type of episode is the kind where we talk behavior. And we're going to be talking about how do we talk to the owners about behavior. That'll all be coming up next. But first, our What's New segment is brought to you by Groomore Software. If you haven't found Groomore, you're missing out. Groomore is an all-in-one software solution for your grooming business. Whether you are a solo mobile groomer or manage several shops, Groomore has everything you need. 24-hour online booking and forms, routing, credit card processing, reminders, Google Calendar and QuickBooks integration, and so much more. And the best customer service anywhere. Shop, mobile, or house call, Groomore has you covered. And they're giving us a free month. Just enter GroomPod22 in the coupon code. And by the way, this podcast is brought to you by our kind sponsors, Best Shot, Show Season, Precision Sharp, Groomore, and Stazco. And you guys, if you'd like to help Barbara get cross country this month, which is very exciting and what's going on, you can do so by going to our website, thegroompod.com, and clicking on that donation button. That money goes straight to Barbara. And Barbara, we had a donation.
Oh, cool. Tell me more.
The donation is from Colleen Gillespie. Colleen's been a GroomPod member forever. So thank you very much, Colleen.
And I thank you as well. It's so lovely to feel everybody's support, and we're getting closer and closer to the just like getting out of Dodge part.
It's going to be fun, and you guys are going to go with us on the journey. I say us, I'm going to go with you guys because I won't be with Barbara, but she'll be reporting on her big adventure as it happens. So I realized something this week that sometimes I'm my own worst enemy. My standard poodle is much easier if I do it every 3 to 4 weeks instead of every 6 to 8 weeks.
Oh, no shit.
Surprise.
No shit, Susie.
Sometimes the most obvious things just blow right past me. Well, she mentioned that she thought she'd rather have the dog done every 4 weeks or every 3 weeks if they travel. And I said, okay, the last 3 times I've been there, the dog has been so much easier for me to get through. So, duh, you guys pay attention to your scheduling. That's the moral of that story. And I wanted to report in on my shopping. I reported in last week on my shopping a little bit, but I want to say that I am so loving my Ooh La La Spa Wear Love Your Paws top. And I have had more compliments on this top than I have ever had on any piece of clothing in my entire life, including my husband, who had never commented on my clothes ever. So it is such a nice piece of clothing. And because I did the unboxing video on the Facebook group, the owners of the company saw it and they said, we'd like to send you another top and want to send Barbara a top too. So we've got stuff coming in the mail from them. And I thought I'd give an extra plug because how cool is that?
I know. I can't wait to try on my top, even though I don't have any current grooming clients. But listen, I had an adventure this week with an ex-client calling me after she went to a new groomer and begged me to come over to her house and fix her dog.
Oh, wow.
But this is a woman who is a little bit younger than I am, but not by a whole lot. And she is in the neighborhood, and she has an old Cairn Interior that I've done forever. Duffy, in fact, I made a YouTube video on hand stripping in the salon on Use This Dog. And he finally turned the corner to where he wouldn't tolerate it at all.
Ah.
And I had to, we had to start clipping it. But she got a new puppy just before I closed the shop. And it's a Cairn Interior, and she wanted it hand stripped, and she took it somewhere where they said they hand stripped. And she got the dog back, and her old dog as well. They she paid $200 for the two of them, and the puppy was barely stripped.
Oh.
And its head wasn't shaped, and there was no, and its tail was left bushy. And they were just like, it didn't look like $100 worth of work. But that wasn't her issue, because she'll pay what she needs to pay. But after working with me, I'm sorry, but I really am very breed profile conscious. And it's helped me a lot having a niche business that focuses on that.
So no reason to apologize for that.
I don't apologize. I'm very proud of that.
Good.
And I'm very cognizant that that was one of the big differences I was as a local groomer. Because not everybody gives a shit, and not everybody cares if their Cairn Terrier looks like a Cairn Terrier. And I'm not talking about a show groom.
Right.
But just the general, and Cairn Terriers are really so easy because they're very rough and ready.
Some of my favorite grooms.
You don't have to be all sleek and smooth. And in fact, that's undesirable.
Right.
With a Cairn Terrier. She's begging me, please, please. And so she said, I'll pick you up and bring you over. I didn't have anything to lose but a little bit of my time, and I needed a break. And we always wanted to hang out together for a bit. And so this was a perfect opportunity. And I got to see her new puppy.
I love that.
I went over there. Yeah, it was so cool. And the puppy was very difficult to work on. I do believe that you should never take a first-time hand strip and try to do it all in one visit.
I'll go a step further and say you shouldn't even do a full groom on some of them.
Some of these exceptions go along with working on puppies.
Yes.
You want to work within the tolerance of the dog, and the dog is not necessarily going to tolerate it really well. So you have to prepare the people for a less than full groom, less well finished.
Yes, that is an interesting topic, because I had a thing happen yesterday. Let me tell you first, off of Etsy, I bought a table divider, which is really nice, and it actually blocks my peeling wall, so I might be able to do some pictures occasionally now because I can block that back wall. But it is not a Hanvi table divider. I'll just put it that way. Like, those Chinese scissors are not scissors from Precision Sharp. It doesn't go low enough so the dogs can sneak underneath it, which is a bummer.
And they will.
Yes. So that was the other update I wanted to give on my shopping. But here's what happened yesterday. I have a friend who is a visiting nurse, and she also has rescue rats. So I know her through the rat community as well. And yeah. And she has,
I'd love to meet her.
Yeah, she's a kick. And on top of it, she has a husband who is now her wife. So they're just it's an interesting household, and I love going there. It's so much fun. And they always pick up strays. But yeah, he's They both are very into rescuing strays, whether they're people or whether they're animals. And so they have quite the menagerie at their house. And they have a friend of mine's old puggle that they were done with. And luckily she took the puggle. They had as many as 5 dogs at one time. They're down to 3 dogs right now. They've got a Japanese chin. They have this old puggle. And then they got a new long-haired chihuahua about a year ago. I think they got the dog when it was 6 months old or somewhere in there. It was pretty small, pretty early. Yesterday was going to be her first real grooming, or at least bath, little tidy up on her pants, because she's long-haired. She's got lots of pants back there.
So, and she's already over a year old and never been groomed.
So I've done her nails twice. So, but that's it. And she was okay for me the last 2 times. She was fine. So they were going to pass me the dog. And it's not a small chihuahua. Like, it's not one of these miniature tiny chihuahuas that curls up in a ball like a potato bug when you pick it up. It's a decent sized, pretty well-constructed, cute, long-haired chihuahua. And they went to hand me the dog. Cat was holding the dog. So Cat goes to hand me the dog, and she hands me the dog head first. And I could see the dog was not comfortable with it, so I said, nope, turn around, I need the butt first. So she turns around to hand me the butt, and with zero warning, the dog nailed her fatty part of her thumb. Just bam! Hit it really hard. It looked like blood everywhere. Dog gets passed along. At least she didn't drop the dog, because it would have been a long fall for that little dog. But let the dog go down, and now she's bleeding all over the place. And we call for wife, originally husband, to come out and get the dog. So he gets the dog. She gets the dog, and the dog is just going ballistic. And I said, let me go get an appropriately fitted muzzle, and we'll see if we can get it on. So they were able to muzzle the dog, and I did the dog's pants and the toenail trim, but that was it. But it was a surprise, because I always knew it could happen, but I've not ever witnessed it. But man, that dog just nailed its humans. Nailed it. Boom. And that was that. And yeah. So this brings on a great topic. How do you talk to the owners about behavior issues? And we're going to talk about that right after this. Did you know that Stazco has come out with a couple of new products? First, there is the Stazco Oatmeal Protein Conditioner. This conditioner provides exceptional body and manageability and super shiny finishes. And it has a wonderful apple scent that I love. Great in the recirculator, too. And they have a new matching protein conditioning spray. Dematting, anti-static conditioning, and finishing all in one. Just like the original Stazco spray, but with that delicious apple fragrance. Look for these new products at trade shows and your favorite distributors like Cascade Grooming Supplies. Ready, groomers? Here comes our first appointment. This can be a tough conversation. And whenever I talk behavior, I always like to start out, as you know, Barbara, by mentioning Chrissy Neumeyer-Smith and her Creating Great Grooming Dogs podcast. You guys obviously consume podcasts, so this is a great one if you want to learn how to help your dogs be better for the grooming process. And what things do you think are important, Barbara? I know you're big on being honest about what reporting what went on.
Well, first of all, do share. Don't just sweep it under the carpet and between you and the bather, this dog is horrible. You've got to let the people know when there are behavior problems. And you owe it to yourself, you owe it to the owner, you owe it to the dog, and you owe it to the next groomer. Oh, this business about passing off a dog and saying, oh, she was fine when she wasn't fine is just a really bad idea. And it's just going for your fear of what's going to happen, because we all fear that we're going to tell the people that their dog was bad or naughty or difficult, and they're going to say, what did you do to him? I had a customer do that to me once. Did you ever have that?
No, I have not had that. but they always kind of blame the grooming process. And I just want to say, these are not bad dogs. These are dogs that are having a difficult time with the process. We do scary stuff
to the dogs.
Yeah, with weird equipment, and we are extremely invasive. We touch the dogs in places where their humans may never touch them. And it's scary. For some dogs, it's scarier than for others. And you need to be really sensitive about that. So I always spin it to your dog is having a difficult time with the grooming process, or your dog wasn't prepared for the grooming process.
That's a good way to word it, Susie. What you don't want to come off like is blaming the dog or calling it bad.
Absolutely.
You want to avoid creating the image of a bad dog, because the people are going to get defensive. They're going to want to dismiss you either by invalidating you or invalidating the process. So you want to be really careful to try to avoid a negative context. But you need to be straight with people.
Yes.
You can say, and you're going to be straight with them. You can tell them, I've got to share a little bit about our process today. That would be Susie.
Yep. And I do, I actually share good things about the process. I might do a good thing, bad thing, good thing sandwich with this when I'm talking to an owner.
Yeah, it's always good to create a positive context. A sandwich works for people, so why wouldn't it work for pet owners?
Absolutely.
They are people, you know.
It's good to throw some humor in there, but behavior problems are when pets get hurt or people get hurt or equipment gets broken. So you can't downplay it.
Yeah, and you need to charge extra. When you endure this extra stress and you have to utilize extra skills, you deserve to get at least $10 more for the difficulty.
And you've got to explain that to the people.
And you got to explain that to the people in the way they understand and are good with it. And there's a real tendency, and I've done this, to trivialize the behavior of the dog.
Right. We used to do that in the beginning, way back when.
Yeah. Way back when. I certainly learned to call it dancing around the table, or he was a little nippy.
Yes. One of the ways that Chrissy Niemeyer-Smith shared with all of us to open up the conversation is to share your safety policy. And she gave us a safety policy, and I'm going to share it with you guys right now. And it says, behavior issues are safety issues. To provide the highest level of care for your pet, we have a safety policy. If at any time your pet gets nervous, anxious, scared, aggressive, or even overly silly, we slow down and help your pet to be comfortable and calm. It's very important to us that the pets in our care are kept safe and stress-free. We use sharp tools and we need to prevent injuries. We will work with your pet to help them feel comfortable. This will build a great experience for successful groomings for your pet's lifetime. Your pet may not be fully groomed to perfection today. We will charge for the time that we spend working with your pet. So yes, the money you charge is super important, and that's why it's good to keep track of your time. So I charge hourly, and I keep that time period in my mind as I'm working with the animals. And I always let the people know in advance what it'll be when I'm dealing with a behavior pet, because you cannot rush them. You might have to break the grooming up into several pieces. You also might not get the perfect groom, like Chrissy says. So if anybody wants a copy of that, I'll post it up on the Groom Pod Facebook group. And Chrissy has shared that. And it works really well to open up that conversation.
Well, another thing that I used to do was that I offered an appointment that was called the Get Acquainted appointment.
I love that.
And it was like a 15 to 20 minute appointment, and I charged, I don't know, $25 or something for it. And I brought the dog in, the people would leave or go sit down out of sight, And I would acquaint the dog with the table, and I would get acquainted with the dog. And we would meet each other. And I would have a brush there, and I would touch the dog with the brush and see what the dog was like being brushed and see how the dog was to have its feet touched and so on and so forth, and just kind of do a little mock work on him or her and do some treats and some fun, silly talk. I have my own language. I'll have to tell you about it someday. I kind of do this speaking in tongues thing.
Uh-huh.
My silly voice. It's my cartoon voice, but it has its own language because it just spills out of my mouth. They just adore it. They adore a silly tone of voice.
They sure do.
You tell a little puppy, "Aren't you a silly dog?" They're going to get silly. "Are you silly? Are you silly? Such a silly goat. Oh, my God." Dogs just go crazy for that.
All right. I got another thing that helps with the conversation, and that's the four questions. And if you're dealing with a behavior case or a dog that has a difficult time with the process, if you ask the owner these four questions, you'll get some insight, and it'll also give the owners a little bit of insight. The first question is, what does your dog do when something happens they don't like? And the second question is, what does your dog do when you do something your dog doesn't like? And then, what does your dog do if you keep doing that thing? And then, what do you think your dog's going to do if I keep doing something your dog doesn't like? And it gets people thinking about what's going on. I don't think I got that exactly right, but it's something like that. Well, I don't think the lady who got bit thought her dog would bite. But boy, was she
probably
wrong.
Probably not.
Yeah.
And you know what? Personally, I think Chihuahuas ought to be on the list of dangerous breeds.
It's scary to be in a big world and be that tiny.
They can be more serious than a terrier because they're more afraid.
I thought this was big punctures. This ended up not being such a serious bite as I look at it this morning. This dog really was trying. There was no warning bite. There was warning body language. I saw it, but they didn't pick up on it.
Well, you saw it, and that's why you had them turn the dog around.
Yep.
But maybe you should have backed off.
They were still sitting on the couch with the dog. They turned the dog around and were standing up, and the dog just nailed her. It happens so fast. Boy, it happens fast, doesn't it? Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the lesson. It can happen in... Thank you.
Yeah. It just happened really fast. But here's the thing. The owners are not without blame here. They have some responsibility to get their dog prepared for the service, whether that's extra visits with us, like Barbara said, with that first get acquainted kind of visit, or if it's handling the dog a little bit more in different ways at home, or whether it's picking up the remote control and touching the body with it, just like a clipper would be. It's all kinds of different things. But if your dog's not prepared for the grooming, we probably won't be able to complete the grooming. And we need to let people know that they've got to do some stuff to make their dog more acceptable. Taking your dog that can't be touched at home to the groomer twice a year, that's extremely dangerous for the groomer. It's not the way you should treat the dog, because then the dog is petrified of grooming, and it really puts the pet, the human, and the equipment at risk. It's not our job to completely teach your dog how to be handled. However, every time we have our hands on a dog on the table, we're training it. We're training it for ourselves. May not help the people at home, but we're always teaching the dog. And I'd never, ever, ever want to minimalize the vet visit. Sometimes there's big pain issues, and sometimes you need to check with the vet first and then proceed with the grooming. So that's just my addendum there. Anything you want to add?
Yeah, it was. I did have a thought. Let me try to retrieve it. Hello, thought. Where are you? The thought was, and I chased it away.
Quit taking it personally. Curb your emotions.
Well, definitely don't take it personally. Sometimes we get into a mano-a-mano situation with a dog on our table, and we become a warrior to their warrior, right?
Yes, so true.
We become a warrior to their warrior, and that just escalates the situation, and it tends to leave you with a feeling of being dissed by this dog and not liking the dog so much. You get defensive to their defense, and you get aggressive to their defense, and it's hard to just turn that off and talk plainly to the people.
Yes.
You want them to feel your pain. It's so dramatic. But what my point is, don't you be dramatic when you've experienced difficulties with a dog. You need to, like, put it in very objective terms and just curb your own emotional responses there so that you don't spill over this kind of feeling-loaded explanation.
Need to do that with the dog, too. This dog is not holding a grudge. True, they can get angry and they can have memories and they can hold grudges. But for the most part, they're just scared or in pain or having a difficult time accepting what you're doing.
2 days after the last podcast recording, I remembered my third behavior misidentification.
What was it?
And then I forget.
That is too funny.
It comes and it goes, and it comes and then it's gone again. It's like, okay, whatever. I know, I spent half the morning thinking, what the fuck was that? And that's exactly where I was last week before the podcast. Like, what was the third one? Why didn't I write it down? Blah, blah, blah. Oh, anyway. It's funny. So listen, Susie, the thing that I didn't talk about right at the beginning was this article I read in Apple News.
Okay.
My phone brought it to my attention, and it was a extensive article about the health damages to noise.
Oh.
It even increases the likelihood of diabetes in large groups of people. There's an association that it can increase incident of stroke.
Wow.
And this was made, these studies, these various studies in Denmark or wherever, you know, like usually they're not in the United States. But there are studies having to do with environmental noise and the associations over a long term of what health problems people experienced. More dementia.
Yikes.
Children that lived underneath the overhead train tracks had more learning difficulties, less learning, more stress stuff going on than people that lived on the other side of the housing project. You know, stuff like that.
Crazy.
And so it reminded me to beg our groomers to use hearing protection.
Yes. Pets and people.
Pets and people. And if you could experience my level of tinnitus, you would put those earplugs in right now. You would wear them around your neck 24/7. Oh, and you know, my Apple Watch tells me that Marco is barking on the bed. And if this continues for longer than 10 minutes, it could be a hazard to my health.
Yikes.
It snitches out Marco. You're too loud. My groovy voice.
Well, speaking of hazards to your health, let's learn whether the shampoo ingredient lists that were sent to us by Dana Chavez, the cat lady, whether these shampoos are safe for cats. But let's hear from our sponsors first.
Shell Season has a great enzymatic cleaner called Kennel Fresh. And you dilute it with warm water and it smells good. And then it evaporates to be a deodorant. As the Kennel Fresh dries, it's enzymatic. It eats the bacteria and the odor source. So it's really good stuff. You can use it indoors or out.
Find it at your local distributors or showseasongrooming.com.
We want to welcome Randy and Cheryl Lowe from Precision Sharp and invite you to check out their website where you can see their newest precise cut shear called Lynx. It's a patented design featuring a thumb ring that slides the length of the handle for perfect ergonomic placement of your thumb. Slide it and lock it into position to get your best groom on. Check it out at precisionsharp.com. Groomers, take your seats. It's time for B-Bird's Classroom. All right, tell us about these shampoo lists.
Okay, so the ingredient list, Susie sent me two ingredient lists that the cat lady that we met in Atlanta, she had this gorgeous white cat that she was rolling around in a carriage. And it was really a cool cat, very interested in the whole thing. So anyway, she wanted to know what I thought of this list of ingredients. And I looked at the list of ingredients and just like, holy crap, it's so long. And I broke it down into what were the main cleansing agents, then the active additives, and then the botanicals, and so on through their list. And it was, one was a fragrance-free, and the other second list was with fragrance. But there was also, Susie, one other significant difference in the two lists.
Yeah.
The unscented one, which had disodium lauryl sulfosuccinate as one of the four cleansing surfactants. And okay, the scented one had also the same four except for the last one. Instead of the disodium lauryl sulfosuccinate, it has disodium cocoyl glutamate. So I recognized both of those surfactants as ultra-mild surfactants. These are a combination of hard-to-pronounce, multi-syllables, ultra-mild surfactants. Remember, I always say that when you have the ultra-mild, you have to have either more of the one or you have to have a combination that adds up to more surfactant.
This is quite a combination.
This is quite a combination. The first ingredient right after the water is Babassu metopropyl betaine. That's a substitute for cocametopropyl betaine. So I'm thinking, well, what is this company? Why are they using this Babassu metopropyl betaine? Anyway, I did some Googling and immediately recognized that these were lists from Hyponic shampoo that makes these super non-allergenic, hypoallergenic formulas for dogs because their beloved Cocker Spaniel got cancer of the ear. Just because a dog gets cancer, why does everybody want to blame it on the bathing products?
Yeah, I don't know.
Why don't they look at the diet? Why don't they change something? Why don't they become diet fanatics? Well, because they probably have more connections in the cosmetic world. I don't know. But anyway, Disodium Laura sulfosuccinate is a ultra-mild cleansing surfactant that has been ethoxylated. Remember I told you that if it says Loreth, anything that has the ETHF in it, ethoxylate.
Okay.
It's an ethoxylate. And then the scented one has disodium cocoyl glutamate, which is not ethoxylated. I decided to ask my girlfriend, AI, who I call Al. I asked AI to compare those two.
Yeah.
She gave me a very good 8-point contrast between the two of them, and including that disodium lauryl sulfosuccinate is more foaming. The glutamate, however, is more conditioning. But what she failed to recognize was the ethoxylation. And the ethoxylation is a part of cancel culture.
Right.
So what this looks like to me is simply, I'm going to take a wild guess and say that they formulated this ultra hypoallergenic, earth-friendly. Earth-friendly is an important thing for these people. The Japanese, it's a Japanese company, and they care about the world. I just have people coming in to help me clean house that are not paying any attention, don't give a damn about recycling, and just send all kinds of bad crap to the dump. Anyway, I'm not going through my trash after I've had someone load up the bin and pick out bad, wrongly. No, I'm not doing that. The two surfactants are virtually similar. They do this similar level of cleaning, similar non-irritant and all of that kind of good stuff. But the biggest difference is that the disodium lauryl sulfosuccinate is an ethoxylate. And ethoxylates have been made to be bad ingredients. And so they, when they later on came up with a scented product because people missed the fragrance.
Yeah.
They changed that final fourth surfactant into using disodium cocoyl glutamate because it's not going to show up on one of those bad ingredient lists. And they're catering to those people. That's their people.
I get it.
That's who they're marketing to. They're marketing to the highly woke shampoo critics. Who are afraid of ethoxylates because somebody lied to them about it.
Well, I would think if you were using a shampoo for cats, you'd want, like, simpler rather than more complicated.
Well, that's my next point. Uh-huh. I'm going to finish it up, though, and say that it was I that told AI about the ethoxylate, and they came back and said, oh, yes, good point.
Wow.
And then they went into a great big long discussion of ethoxylation. So the thing that concerns me the most about using this particular shampoo, either the fragrance or the non-fragrance, is that it has 16 botanical extracts.
That's a lot.
That's too many, Susie. This is a big trend. This is Japanese and Korean beauty. Japanese beauty is now called J-beauty. And this kind of an ingredient list is a J-beauty ingredient list.
Okay.
I looked up all of these 16. I did. I actually Googled every single one of these 16 herbals just to remind myself of what's happening. And it got very interesting at the end of the list. But there's a couple of them that are on the EU allergens list, including the lavender and the peppermint. And actually, they have peppermint and corn mint. which is just a cheap version of mint, less therapeutic, actually. I just want to remind people, we're looking at this batch, this so-called blend. How do we know all of these lavender, bee balm extract, peppermint extract, freesia extract, chamomile, rosemary, Chinese foxglove, corn mint, chrysanthemum, licorice, goji berry, Chinese thuja?
Okay, that's crazy.
How do we know all of those things work together well? Has there ever been a study of this particular blend used in a shampoo over dogs or cats for several months? No. Each one of these herbal extracts has had something, you know, has a history of being a very effective antioxidant. How many antioxidants do you need in a shampoo? Why don't you use one good one, right?
Right.
They are not supplied full strength. Herbal extracts are not supplied, like, it's not 100% lavender. The Monarda Didyma leaf extract, a.k.a. bee balm extract.
Yeah.
One of my sources, Making Cosmetics, has that available as a 20% in solution of glycerin and water. They're not declaring their glycerin. The water is just part of their water, probably. But if it's a 20% solution and you put an ounce in making a 50-gallon batch of shampoo, how much are you going to have per shampoo?
What is the therapeutic value of that stuff in those tiny increments?
In those tiny increments, well, it's because when you add them all up, there's some antioxidant activity. And if one doesn't work so well, there's another one that's next to it, right?
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Where I got interested was down towards the end of their list. And we have Biota orientalis leaf extract, known as Chinese thuja, which possibly promotes hair growth by initiating anagen phase.
Huh.
That's really fascinating. But the studies have not been conclusive. I didn't go in any great depth because I was looking at this whole shitload of herbs. I'm going to read this to you. Acorus calamus root extract. It promoted hair growth in mice. But then I read on another website, in the U.S., use of calamus and its product was banned in 1968.
Whoa.
Following demonstration of carcinogenic effects of long-term high-dosage application in an animal model.
And way back then. And they're putting it in something now.
Yeah. We're not dealing here with anything like a high-dosage application. I mean, this is like fairy dust amounts of all of these different herbs make for maybe 2% herbal blend. Maybe 4% at the most. You can't even have very much of this herbal blend, or it's going to be hard to preserve. It's going to, like, interfere with the action of the other active ingredients in the shampoo.
If there's all those plants and stuff in there, doesn't that make it more likely to go bad more quickly?
Yeah. Well, but each one is in glycerin. You get my point. There's a combination of herbals that we white people in America recognize, right?
Right.
And then these kind of exotic Chinese...
Weird stuff.
You know, like Lycium chinensis fruit extract, goji berry. Well, I know that they sell the juice, because it's a very potent antioxidant. destroys free radicals caused by pollution. Well, then you should drink it. But should we be washing our hair with it? I think for me, anything over 5 botanicals is just overdose. It's just herbal mush. I just don't get it. And they have some oil, but instead of like show season has sunflower oil triglycerides, it's like one of the last ingredients of all of their shampoos. This one has camellia japonica, Japanese camellia seed oil, sunflower seed oil, and olive oil. Why not just have one? Why do you have to have 3 different oils? And then you also, in case the oils don't work too good, you got panthenol, which we all recognize as a moisturizing ingredient. You know, but here's an interesting one that they have in both of these products. It's called Saccharomyces rice bran ferment.
Fermented rice?
Fermented rice product. Now, do you remember that a year ago, Dave texted us, like, were we ready for fermented ingredients?
Yes.
And he was kind of joshing about it. Well, here it is. Saccharomyces / rice bran ferment.
Huh.
So I looked that up.
Okay. What does it do?
What is rice bran ferment? Oh, good question. When rice bran is fermented, all these unique and dynamic components are concentrated, allowing for deep, long-lasting penetration.
Ooh.
At Shiku Beauty, the source of this information, we use rice bran ferment as a powerful ingredient in many of our skincare products to help lock in moisture without clogging your pores. Rice bran ferment softens and clears skin naturally while conditioning your skin by preventing minerals in the water from causing undesired reaction. So it kind of has some mineral absorbing ability in there.
Oh.
Yeah, kind of like EDTA.
Right.
So it kind of goes on, but it's a skin cleanser ingredient, and it's very Japanese, and it's very today. You know, so this is one that their locals are going to look to. Oh, yeah, rice bran ferment, good thing.
Just some applause.
All right. So, you know, there's something for everybody in this list, but for me, it's a little bit overwhelming, especially for cats. I have a funny attitude about all of these specialized cat products because I actually just think a more simple shampoo, like the Stazco shampoos, are better for cats.
Right.
Less is more, where there's fewer ingredients to cause mischief. You can do without the fragrance.
I mean, I'm not so concerned with fragrance with cats unless they're in a house with other cats, and then the cats can shame and judge and bully the cat that comes in smelling good. So I don't do a lot of fragrance on cats. But with the recirculator, we're not depositing a lot of fragrance on there anyway. But I'm with you. I like to use simple, good cleaning shampoo. I often go to True Tearless for cats. It works really well.
Right.
I love it. It's great.
I happen to think that cats don't necessarily need a more mild surfactant base because they tend to have an oilier skin and coat, and they're not frequently bathed, so they can benefit by and large from a sodium lauryl sulfate shampoo base.
Grime time.
Well, grime time's a little bit harsh.
Okay. I use it on greasy cats.
Well, it's definitely a degreaser.
Yeah. Stazco, great choice.
Yeah.
All right.
And probably the new Best Shot clarifying shampoo might not be too bad.
Oh, yeah. Definitely like that.
So have I said enough?
I think we have. I think we can wrap this one up right here. That was fun, though. I enjoyed it.
It's an interesting product. And I don't want to seem like I'm like dissing the whole brand.
Just dissing it for cats.
I'm just suggesting that this is perhaps not the best choice for cats, that they didn't think it through.
Okay. Well, cool. Thanks for being here with us, everyone. We appreciate it. We appreciate all the support, and we appreciate that you guys support our sponsors. So happy grooming. We'll see you next time on the Groom Pod. Bye, Barbara. Bye, everybody.
Bye, Susie. Have a great week.